Rabbi Andrew Davids is the executive director of something called ARZA. What is ARZA, Rabbi Davids?
Well, ARZA stands for the Association of Reformed Zionists of America. It's the Israel and Zionist arm of the Reform movement in the United States. We are now celebrating our 28th year as an organization, and over the past almost 30 years, we've seen our organization grow from a very small group of people who were diehard Zionists within the Reform movement to a very significant organization, both in terms of the number of members, the size of our staff, and the impact of our program.
I think there are people who would be surprised to know that there are, within the Reform movement, a Zionist department or a Zionist arm. Many people think of the Reform movement as an institution directed towards assimilation into the dominant society, whether it was Germany or the United States. What is the history of Zionism and the Reform movement?
Well, first, Mr. Ketzler, I want to challenge a statement that you just said. I don't think that the Reform movement in any of its permutations throughout history was had a assimilationist program. It was, if anything, it was an acculturationist. That is, how does one find oneself a German or a French or certainly an American, and also a religious, active, engaged Jew, not only connected to one's own faith, but also connected to the Jewish people. I think it's important for us to remember, on the one hand, I think the Reform movement as an organization has always been one step behind. When people were beginning to think about Zionism, there were a number of the leadership that were anti-Zionist. When people began to be a little more Zionist, we were the non-Zionists. When people became post-Zionist, we became the Zionists. So there has been, on one hand, always a certain amount of lag. On the other hand, I think it's important for us to realize that there's a narrative that's been accepted by most of the public, which is quite inaccurate. And that narrative is that the Reform movement was a non-Zionist or anti-Zionist religious movement, and Orthodoxy always felt naturally at home in the Zionist community. And the reality is that certainly at the end of the 19th century, all of the early manifestations of what we would call the streams today, whether it was Reform, Conservative, or Orthodox, saw themselves as modern religious movements, detaching themselves from any sort of sense of nationality. And the handful of individuals in any of the streams who had some connection to Israel, whether it was Stephen Weiss and Abba Hillel Silver in the Reform movement, or Rav Kook in the Orthodox movement, were really seen as peripheral characters. And Orthodoxy didn't embrace Zionism until very late, in the same way that the Reform movement sort of saw a new reality and transformed its orientation. However, because the Reform movement is not a part of the political process in any significant way here in Israel, did not help shape the narrative that would be called the Zionist history, the Reform movement was on the outside, whereas the Orthodox movement, which was peripheral in terms of its orientation towards Zionism, had soldiers on the ground, were a part of that original status quo, a status quo that that was believed to only be temporary because most of the non-religious leadership in this country in the 1920s, 1930s, 1940s thought that Orthodoxy, they were seeing the last generation of Orthodoxy. So it really is important for us to understand that all religious movements were messianic in their nature, whether they were believed in a personal Messiah or a messianic age where Jews and Gentiles would live together, really didn't buy into the Zionist ideal until a new reality came about in the 1940s and 1950s. The Reform movement as a movement, however, as early as 1937, when it put out its second principle statement, it's what's called the Columbus Platform, already in 1937 embraced the idea of the struggle for a national homeland, the need for the Reform movement to support, at that point it talked about our brothers in Palestine, the leadership of the American Reform community was led by Reform rabbis. Abba Hillel Silver, Stephen Weiss, these were the leaders of the American Zionist movement. They were all deeply committed to Reform Judaism and deeply committed to the Jewish people and to the state and to what would become the State of Israel. And quite frankly, Judah Magnus, one of those Reform rabbis, decided to manifest that by making Aliyah and became the first president of the Hebrew University. So we have to look back at our past, see who writes narrative, understand what was fact, what was real. Today, the American Jewish community as a whole, certainly post 67, got on board with the Israel agenda and with the Israel project and the Reform movement. In some ways, the most American of the various Jewish streams got on board as well. And that's where my organization came about. Although we were a more political organization in our early stages, as a whole, the Reform movement has already been sending young people for long-term programs to Israel for almost 50 years. In the 1970s, like the other movements, we saw a huge surge of Aliyah. And that's when we established our two kibbutzim in the Arava. It's when we had a garim that formed a mitzvah up in the Galil. We were the first institution in terms of a rabbinical seminary that required all of its students to do a year in Israel. That was in the early 70s. So it's been a long time since one could paint the Reform movement with the brush, the non-Zionist or anti-Zionist brush.
Thank you for restructuring our understanding. I know that you have been involved over the years in youth programs bringing young people to Israel. Could you speak a little bit about these programs and what you see in the future for these programs?
I'm fairly committed to the idea that if we inculcate our young people with a deep connection and a deep love and a deep passion for the Zionist project, they can become active partners in that. And I do believe that Zionism did not culminate with the establishment of the state. That was really only the first stage of Zionism. And if we look at the Declaration of the State of Independence of the State of Israel, we really see it lays out a two-stage proposal. The first stage, sort of picking up on Theodor Herzl's understanding and of his book, Der Judenstaat, which was the state for the Jews, or the state of the Jews, that first stage, we've seen that accomplished, the ingathering of the exiles, the establishment of the state. In our generation, for the first time in 2,700 years, there are more Jews now living in the borders of the land of Israel than outside. But that second stage, which is talked about later on in the Declaration of Independence, that perhaps is inspired by the mistranslation of Herzl's book, and that would be a Jewish state, really talks about what type of state we'll create once we create this safe haven for the Jews, once we ingather the exiles. And that's a state that is dedicated to the vision of the prophets, a state based on justice and righteousness that seeks peace in any way possible, that understands the importance of religious freedoms and of political freedoms. And that type of state, in my mind, is the next stage of Zionism. In some ways, less a geographic or physical Zionism and more of a spiritual Zionism. We want our young people to be a part of that practice. In the same way that young people helped establish the physical state, I believe young people can shape the new vision of what the state of Israel looks like. To do that, we bring literally hundreds and thousands of young people here to Israel on all types of programs. For many of them who've grown up in an American milieu, which is a deeply religious environment, whether we talk about In God We Trust or sort of the assumptions and presumptions of society that everyone has a church that they'll belong to, that is the environment that our kids have grown up in. We need to help add other spokes to the wheel of their Jewish consciousness. And by bringing them here, we expose them not only to the state of Israel, but to the concepts of Jewish sovereignty, to the concepts of Jewish responsibility. We certainly, you can see when they come here that they connect to this concept of Klal Yisrael, of Jewish peoplehood, which incidentally is a very interesting phrase, Jewish peoplehood, which perhaps many of your listeners automatically, it's sort of a natural word for us to use as Jews. When we type in the word peoplehood on Microsoft Word, it shows up as a misspelling. It's really an artificial construct from the perspective of the American environment and the English-speaking environment. We've sort of invented that. So part of the role of bringing a young person to this place where they can meet their brothers and sisters, and I say brothers and sisters, I worry when we see people talk about our cousins. That assumes that there's already a gap, and we certainly don't want to get to a situation where we talk about our Israeli third cousins once removed. When we bring young people here, expose them to Jewish peoplehood and the manifestation of Jewish peoplehood, that is the Zionist project, they suddenly add to their own Jewish vocabulary a deep concept that didn't exist in their American vocabulary. And that's an important piece, because for a young person who's very self-focused, if we can give them a sense of peoplehood and of family, then suddenly they see Israel as an extension of self. Whereas if we're just talking about history, if we're defining Israel merely as 48, 56, 67, 73, or we're exposing them in Israel that's inaccessible to them, you know, every Israeli is either a hero or a victim, that's going to be problematic. But if we can get them to feel that this is a part of their family, we think even at that stage in development, when a young person is so self-focused, they'll see Israel as part of self. And quite frankly, now that I've been 15 years in that particular working in that particular vineyard, I've seen the fruits of the results. I've seen young people who have transformed themselves and see Israel as an essential, sacred part of their own Jewish identity, whether it becomes the place that they come to on a regular basis to study and to learn or to live here on a temporary basis, whether it's individuals who've made Aliyah out of our programs, whether it's individuals who see one of their primary directives is to bring back their experience and to share it with others, whether it's young people, whether it's their family, it's their community, their campus, their congregation. It's a tremendously important piece. On a sort of more futuristic perspective, it may be that we are looking at Dor HaMidbar, that there's a generation that isn't going to get it. Either they feel they're so focused on self and spirituality and me that the concept of connecting to Israel and the Jewish people just is not a part of their vocabulary. And I see many people in their mid-20s to mid-50s who were not around at any of the peak moments that shaped memory, whether it was 48, 67, even 91, when the Ethiopian community came en masse, and those of us who feel that deep connection felt that we were a part of it. They are missing out on that. Or they have connected to Israel, but through a paradigm that is unfortunately quite unhealthy. It's almost codependent. It's a one-way relationship that their job is to send a check to Israel. Or to, you know, if we think of Amichai Zichrono Livracha's poem of tourists, their job is to come in and to lust after the young Israeli men and women and to connect to stones but not to real people. And then to go back and say, you know, I've been moved. Israel is the most amazing place. I'd never live there, I might not even go back, but I've like bought into this idea. That generation, maybe, you know, Dor HaMidbar, we may need to let that generation sort of wander around in its own paradigm and build a new generation who didn't know that type of mental slavery, who are open to a new way of connecting to Israel, whether it's Israel as a place that I connect to because it's part of my family, whether Israel is a place that I connect to because I connect with Israelis and I connect with Israeli culture, and I'm exposed to how Israeli culture is an outgrowth and a manifestation of a new way of building Jewish culture, or it's this much more passionate activist orientation that there's the physical state has been built, but the spiritual, the values state, is still emerging, and that there's not only an opportunity for partnership, but for a young, liberal-oriented Jew, they have something to bring to the table. They can be helpers in building, you know, this Mishkan. And that's a lot of what I try to do. I read recently that for a metal to have the property of a magnet, it only needs 1% of its molecules to be parallel. And, you know, if I can find that 1%, that 2%, that 3%, that will serve as the chalutzim lifnei machaneh, as the leaders who go ahead and prepare the groundwork for where things go, and I can help hook them up with Israelis who have that same mindset, who understand that the Zionist endeavor is not yet over, that there's still tremendous work to be done, that there's a society that, on the one sense, I wouldn't say it's physically secure, because it's one only needs to read the newspaper to realize that there are still existential physical threats, but that there are also deeper issues, whether it's poverty, whether it's issues of equality, whether it's issues of fairness. There's still tremendous work to be done, and there needs to be workers to do that.
Could you speak a little about the past programs from your experience in the youth department, and the future programs coming up that people should know about?
Sure. We first of all, we are really starting to look at a few different programs. And while I did spend a number of years working with young adults, I'm interested in engaging all types of individuals, whether it's the parents of preschool children, retirees, young professionals, families. We have a couple of exciting projects about to come out of the hopper. The first, in the last week, we signed a sort of a memo of understanding between the Reform Movement, the State of Israel, and the Jewish Agency for Israel, signed by Israel Maimon, Zev Bielski, and Rabbi Eric Yaffe, which is going to look at the Masa initiative as a wonderful catalyst for developing some new, exciting reform programs for young adults. Sure. The Masa program was a profound idea that was developed by Ariel Sharon, which took some funds that sort of appeared, sort of found what we would call found money, and said, here's a significant financial package. What could we do with this that would be truly profound? You know, sort of in the same way that Bill Gates or one of these other individuals who've said, you know what, I've got billions of dollars. How do I do something truly profound? A decision was made to use these dollars to bring 18 to 32-year-olds from the diaspora to Israel for significant long-term programs. There's certainly been a lot of coverage about the Taglit Birthright Israel experience, where individuals 18 to 26 come for a 10-day free experience. In the last few weeks, the 100,000th participant in the Birthright Israel experience did come to Israel, and this is a program that the Reform Movement has been involved in since the beginning. But there was a sense that 10 days is sort of an inoculation. It creates moments of excitement and passion, but it's not the same as a long-term grounding in more of the reality of Israel. So Masa is hoping to bring 20,000 individuals a year for long-term programs, whether that's programs between high school and college, whether it's academic programs, whether it's post-academic internships, anywhere from religious programming to historical programming to political programming to community activism. So this Masa initiative is really quite exciting and has the potential to transform not only the sense of Jewish identity for the participants, but transform the relationship between Israel and the diaspora. So we're hoping to see over the next few years to build on the three established programs that we already have that bring young people here for 5 months to a year, to add three other programs to our menu, and to see an increase. At present, we are sending about 250 young people to Israel from the Reform Movement in North America on what would be considered a long-term program. We'd like to see that reach 1,000 on one of our programs, also believing that if 1,000 kids come on one of our programs, another 1,000 or 1,500 will be motivated to try something else on the wider menu beyond the Reform Movement. If I have, in 5 years from now, if I have 5,000 young people who have come on a long-term program to Israel within the framework of the reform movement with our particular orientation and consciousness, our capacity to speak the language of these young people, I believe we will see a different reform movement, not only in North America, but here and throughout the world, that these will be our lieutenants and captains out in the field, whether they go on to serve in a professional capacity as an educator or a cantor or a rabbi or as an activist in their community. To me, that's tremendously important. Quite frankly, I think it's important for the broader community. On campuses today, the Israel conversation is rife with problems. It is often tremendously politicized, and it's often a dialogue between an 18 or 19-year-old Jew and a Palestinian graduate student. There's tremendous asymmetry, and certainly when we look at where somebody is in their stage of life, campus is a place where you begin to question everything appropriately. But along with that comes the questioning of one's connection to the Jewish people, a lot of questioning about Israel. In that battle, there are people move to the extremes. And so we do have Jewish student activists who are in the trenches fighting this fight, but often may come to it with a particular perspective, which for many, not only of many of the Jews, but many of the non-Jews, seems as extreme a narrative, as single-minded, as closed a narrative as the Palestinian narrative. And so they either walk away or they look and say, who's the underdog? I'll support the underdog. If I can expose these young people and train them to go back into their campus environment with an approach that is perceived as open and moderate and thoughtful and caring, both about the human rights of the Palestinian community and the human rights of the Jewish community here, and who can talk from a place of tremendous love for Israel, but not in a way that's presented as closed off. Not only do I think we can add to the campus dialogue, but we can impact how the non-Jewish students perceive this issue. And that's going to be tremendously important. In the year 2020, the young people on campus now, on the Ivy League campuses, are going to be the senators and members of Congress and business leaders. And this is the time that we have to orient them to better understanding what this whole story is about. So the Masa'a piece with the reform movement is tremendously important. We have a very exciting project that we're doing in partnership with the Israel Ministry of Tourism. Our goal is to triple the number of Reformed Jews who come to Israel on vacation to visit. The one thing we know about a second trip to Israel, it's really the only thing we know, is that you have to have a first trip. So if we can get families, young people, professionals, young professionals, affinity groups to come travel to Israel on a regular basis, I think that will add to this sense of a living bridge. This summer, we have 70 congregations from the Reform Movement who are traveling with Arza and being exposed to Israel in a caring, thoughtful, intelligent manner. We are bringing a full-time senior shaliach to the Reform Movement this year, whose sole focus will be Aliyah. That's a new direction for us. We've had shlichim before. We've had part-time young shlichim dealing with Aliyah, which has primarily been focused on supporting a very small garin and supporting long-term programs. Bringing a more senior person, really, we think is going to help put Aliyah back on the radar screen of the American Jewish community, and certainly within the liberal reform community, and to present Aliyah not so much in a binary way, either you come to Israel or not, but rather as a continuum, that Israel's a place I come to every year, Israel's a place that I spend my summers, Israel's a place that I come and live for 4 years, Israel's a place where I buy a home and I'm here half the time. Aliyah can be many things, and not just zero or one. So that's an exciting project. And then we're getting out into the field and working at the grassroots level with congregational leaders to help them think about Israel, to help them engage in an Israel conversation that stems not just from a political or a cultural perspective, but from a religious perspective. And these are just a handful of some of the new programs and projects that we're working on.
The reform movement is a worldwide movement. Is ARTSA also work around the globe? We have many listeners from many countries, so some of them might be interested where they can find you.
ARTSA has two different key partners that are part of the international liberal community. The first is our political partner. We are an important member of the organization called ARTSENU. ARTSENU is the political Zionist, progressive Jewish Zionist organization. And we have congregations from liberal movements and reform movements and progressive movements around the world. And collectively, we work within the framework of the World Zionist Organization and JAFI, the Jewish Agency for Israel, to support not only liberal Judaism here in Israel, but to support liberal and progressive Judaism around the world. Certainly many of our projects in the former Soviet Union are supported through that framework. Secondly, we are partners with the World Union for Progressive Judaism, which is the umbrella organization for progressive communities throughout the world. The North American community is certainly the largest. There are over 900 Reform congregations in the United States and Canada. Somewhere between 1.3 and 1.5 million individual members and about 315,000 households. But we have congregations all over the world. We have both the liberal and reform movements in Great Britain. We have a significant number of congregations in Australia, South Africa, throughout continental Europe. We have 10 rabbis now working in the former Soviet Union, and we have Kihilot all over Belarus and Ukraine and Russia and so on and so forth. We have supporters in and congregations in Central and South America, in the Far East, in Hong Kong and Singapore. So we really have a global stretch, and all of us are working together, whether it's in the framework of ARTSENU or the framework of the World Union for Progressive Judaism, to elevate Israel's position on the movement's agenda and to, in some ways, help swing the pendulum a little bit back from where it was 150 years ago at the when the Reform Movement first came into being and it saw itself as a religious faith of the Mosaic persuasion. We're putting a little more of the Moses back into this in terms of peoplehood in the Promised Land, and not necessarily swinging the pendulum all the way back the other way and moving away from our concept of a deeply held religious a faith that comes from a place of autonomous action, that comes from a place of informed choice, but that also takes into account our responsibilities to the collective.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Davids.